Los Angeles. You're now tuned into Slauson Girl Speaks
with award-winning journalist and South Central native, Slauson Girl.
This is a safe space.
Yeah!
Celebrating authentic black expression.
Where Slauson Girl dives deep
into Los Angeles history,
politics, and news.
While discussing culture, race, and identity with carefully curated guests
to keep you open-minded in today's society.
No cap.
Follow Slauson Girl on all social media platforms and stream Slauson Girl Speaks on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You don't want to miss this.
Welcome to Slauson Girl Speaks. I am your host, Slauson Girl, bringing you world news with a South Central state of mind. On this episode of Slauson Girl Speaks, I have the pleasure of speaking with Andre Spicer. He is a father, an entrepreneur, a businessman, and you may know him from the Hub City Radio. Today, we're going to talk about his run for Compton City Council District 2, as well as his journey growing up in the city of Compton. Andre, how are you today?
I'm well. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for your time. And I'm just really excited to talk to you about Compton's 2021 elections and just Compton with you being a native of the city.
That's dope. No, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate coming on to your platform and mm-hmm. being able to, I mean, you just taking an interest in speaking to me. That's pretty dope. So I'm happy to be here.
Definitely. So talk to us a little bit about your decision to run for Compton City Council. You know, the elections are quickly approaching.
Yeah, the election is actually happening right now. So this is like the first time ever that we had an election, obviously during COVID. Mm-hmm. This is the first time we can vote for 30 days straight. So people have gotten their ballots last week and some have mailed them in already. They can mail them in up until April 20th.
Okay, so. Definitely. So, yeah, like what inspired you to put in your bid to run for city council?
So for the last, I don't know, maybe like 10 years, I've been a community activist in mm-hmm. the city. And I started the Hub Radio originally because I didn't like the images that were put out there about Compton. You know, everywhere I went, they said I didn't walk like, talk like, dress like, move like I was from Compton. So I was all based on changing that stereotype. And changing that stereotype, I obviously have to start at home. So I started a platform, a radio station, the Hub Radio, and we used that to tell our own stories. From there, I was able to kind of get more involved in my community. And I realized how much politics had an effect on everything that we did. And that was from a street level, that was from a sales level, that was from just everything. You know, everything that we looked at Compton to be, a lot of that stemmed from City Hall. So then I'm looking at the numbers. Like, there's 100,000 people, but the average age is 25 years old. The average voter is 55. So there's a huge gap of people that are just not engaged. And it's no one's fault but their own, obviously. But I have to do something to engage my particular group. And so I'm just starting to take more interest in what was going on. And over the years, I'm looking at people who's running and what they're bringing to the table and what they're not bringing to the table and what the community is, you know, the resources that we're lacking and how we're just being ignored in certain areas. And I'm like, man, no one seems to want to do the job. And I felt like I had a heart to really want to change my community. So I'm looking at who's running. I'm like, nah, I can't. I have to throw my bid in there. And then this mm-hmm. is the only, people was telling me, if you really want to get young people engaged, you got to be the change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you hear that so many times, you're like, man, maybe it is me. And so thus, you know, just the opportunity came about and I just felt like it was my time.
Definitely. Okay, so when you look around Compton in 2021, what do you think, you know, some of the biggest issues facing the city is?
Infrastructural issues. Basic, everyday things that we should have. It should be trash cans on the streets. If you want to clean up the trash, put trash cans out. We don't have trash cans. Trees haven't been trimmed in years. And what happens is they start to actually, like, grow to each other. Like, you know what I'm saying? From across the street. So, you know, you have a tunnel of trees that are just blocking all sunlight and all that out, which a lot of times makes certain areas unsafe. You're looking at graffiti. You know, some people look at graffiti like, man, that's some nasty stuff on the wall. It's ugly. I don't want to see all that stuff on the wall. When in actuality, it's even deeper than that. It's actually, graffiti tells a story. Mm-hmm. And when you're from the hood, you understand that those stories sometimes incite acts of violence. So, but if you're not from the street, you don't understand that, or it doesn't rank as a top priority for you. So those are issues. Obviously, we can talk about potholes. That's just, you know, we're all right. We got potholes. That's,
where did these big crater like potholes come from? Is it because of like the?
It's just us ignoring. It's putting band-aids on issues. It's like putting a band-aid on a somewhere you need stitches. Mm-hmm. You actually need surgery. You need a process has to happen. We're putting band-aids on issues, and it just gets worse and worse and worse over the years.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it has anything to do with like large like trailers and things like that coming through Compton because of like the industry and different like places of business, like factories and things like that, that are there that would, you know.
You are absolutely right. Because it's only, so you have certain signs that say, you know, no two-ton trucks on this street.
Right.
You don't have those in Compton. We know, I know that they belong on Alameda, certain thoroughfares, but they're not, they drive wherever they want to drive. You know, they turn wherever they want to turn, and no one's holding them accountable.
Okay, so less enforcement about where these vehicles are going.
Right. That's one issue. I mean, and then now that comes from our relationship with the sheriffs.
Okay.
So Compton doesn't have the best relationship with the sheriffs.
Definitely not.
People of color don't have always the best relationships with the sheriffs.
Well, can we say people of color? Because it's people of color that dominate now 50% almost of the sheriffs. So.
Okay. But still.
Okay. You know,
when you're blue, when you're on that side,
exactly, it's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, you're not. Your ethnicity kind of goes away, and that's okay. Whatever on that, right? I understand that you're dealing with that. Just know that that's the case. Yes,
right.
Blue,
definitely, so, definitely.
But we want to kind of like build that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But in Compton, the relationship isn't there. So I want to build a community. Relationship
mm-hmm.
with them, you know, some type of community organization, and we have a relationship with them to say what we want policed.
Right.
Of course, we want to stop trucks from driving down the street, but mm-hmm. Dre is not going to stand out there and do a citizen's arrest.
Right.
You know, that's not going to happen. So we're expecting you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're looking at prostitution on Long Beach Boulevard. We're like, yo, you want to, you know, this is what we want.
That's policed. Still a big issue these days, prostitution in Long Beach Boulevard.
There's still an issue.
That's
still
an
issue. Okay. Yeah. So there's certain things that we want policed. I mean, and I've talked to some neighbors, and they'll tell me certain streets or certain corners or certain houses, like, yo, like, it's an issue over there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And everybody knows it. So it's like, how does it continue to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really comes down to the relationship is not there.
So do Compton have those signs that say, you know, these trailer, you know, trucks can't come through here, or they just aren't being enforced? Or
they're not being enforced.
So there are.
I've seen a couple.
Okay.
There's not nearly as many as it should be.
Okay.
But regardless, it's not being enforced.
Mm-hmm.
No one's getting traffic tickets.
No one? In Compton?
Ain't no traffic tickets.
They're getting their money another way then, if they're not getting it off traffic tickets.
Yeah.
So why do you think that, okay, this is definitely a question that I had, you know, down the line, but I guess since we started talking about the sheriffs, you know, there's this huge issue with supposed to be gangs inside the sheriff's department and things like that. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, like, even beyond that, but that being a huge point of concern right now for residents, why do you think that the Compton Sheriff Station, it seems to be a little bit like, not out of control, but they kind of have a little bit more, just maybe not doing things by the books, and it's like an accepted culture there or something like that.
Why is that the case?
Or is that the case? Or am I like...
Well, no, that's definitely a concern.
Mm-hmm.
There's been evidence of I believe there's been evidence brought to the table of gangs inside of the Compton Sheriff Department. But in a lot of cases, law enforcement, they investigate themselves.
Right.
And us on the outside, it's kind of like, you know, what's our recourse? What do we... Mm-hmm. So we have to call in other outside investigations.
Right.
To happen in those cases. You got to go, you know, step up higher to address those issues.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer the question as to if they're really there, I mean, I can't say for sure. I'm not in there with them. You know, the evidence has pointed to it. I think that it's something that we should look at. I think mm-hmm. something should be investigated, not within the sheriff department, but something outside. And maybe there has been courses of action taken.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we don't have the relationship, so we don't know if something has happened in regards to those gangs. I really don't know.
Right, definitely. Okay, so you grew up in Compton.
Born and raised
in Compton. So, like, talk to us a little bit about, like, what life was like for you growing up in Compton.
I had a pretty pretty balanced childhood, I would say. I got a little bit of everything. So
mm-hmm.
my grandmother stays in Richland Farms. So her backyard, like, I had pigs, goats, chickens, horse, sheep, cows, rabbits, geese, like, all this is in the backyard. And then on the east side, it's more city act. You know, it's more city-like, you know. You got the gangs, you got the prostitutions, you got the drugs. And not to say that it wasn't on the other side, but it was more prevalent on that side, on the east side of town for me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember always, like, when I'm walking through my neighborhood, you'll see a lot of prostitution, a lot of pimps, like, on Long Beach Boulevard. I remember some of their names. I remember what they looked like. I remember how I felt seeing them. And the crazy part about it is, like, now my kid is doing the same thing, and she's experiencing those same things. So it's like, damn, when do we kind of get a grip on this?
Mm.
But, you know, other than that, you know, I think I feel like I dealt with the same things that everybody else dealt with. I don't feel like mine was out of the ordinary, you know, single parent household. Just me and my sister there, you know, just mom's holding it down, working 100 hours a week, you know, making sure that we got food on the table. She made sure I stayed in private school.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't trust the Compton school system. So she kept me, you know, I went to Our Lady Victory, then I went to Verbum Day High School.
Oh, nice. Shouts out to Verbum Day.
Yeah. You know, we
a lot of success stories or a lot of,
a
you know.
A lot of success stories out of Verb.
Definitely.
And that's like a frat. Like, dudes from Verb, it's like, I don't care what year you came out of. They're like, yo, Verb, you know.
Yeah, that's what's
it's
up.
It's all love. So, but yeah, that was just like a little balance of my childhood. I always wanted to do things different.
Mm-hmm.
I was comfortable being different.
Mm-hmm.
And I always stood out. So I went to school for fashion design after high school.
Mm.
So I started designing, like, evening gowns and tuxedos and, you know, things like that. I was just on a whole nother page,
mm-hmm.
but still in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, I guess my life just always felt like a balance to me.
That's good. You need to balance. What do you, when you look back, like, what are some of the biggest, like, things that your mother instilled in you? Like, when you think back to your childhood, like, what are some of, like, the biggest lessons that you can, like, pull from?
Don't follow nobody.
Period.
You know, don't be a follower. You know, always set your own. She just always taught me just to do whatever I wanted to do. And not in a negative way. She always taught me to have respect and treat people with respect. But it was like, yeah, whatever you want to do, you can do it.
Right.
And, I didn't believe it until I actually started to exercise some of those thoughts and ideas and, like, kind of press the line on some issues. But after I got it, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just, that was the sky's the limit for me at that point. You know, it was like nothing I couldn't do and be comfortable in just who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Definitely. Okay. So I know you said, like, you know, you had a balance, and that's good that you were able to, like, be provided, you know, some sense of balance within Compton, right? But when you left your house, you know, were there any kind of like outside forces that you found yourself like, you know, struggling against, like outside the home?
So not coming up with a father in the household, you always look for the macho or manly things to do. You know, it's like, okay, you know, this is mom, this sis over here. My whole family is all women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm the only other boy in my family is the same age as my daughter. So, like, I had all this with all women. So I was like, I need to get out here in the streets and see, you know, what's out here, you know?
Right.
You struggle with what you think is cool, what you think works, you know what I'm saying? So you look at, I grew up in the same neighborhood. I would be associated, I guess, I grew up with them. You know what I'm saying? I grew up there. So you have those forces that pull on you, you know. And you don't, you know, it's just like, where do you fit in at? You know what I'm saying? So I never had a problem with trying to fit in anywhere. And I guess that was one of the main things that my mom wanted to teach me. It's like, yo, you don't have to do any of this stuff, follow any of that stuff, but you pull what you're going to pull from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I struggle with the street aspect of it. You know, you see the pimps out here and they doing their thing, and then you feel maybe you got some type of pull on females, or you know, you can get certain things done a particular way, so you struggle with that,
or
it's just all these different influences, because there's no mentors around, there's nobody to say, hey, look, this is like, my whole generation before them. Like, there's a huge gap between my generation and my father's generation. Like, there's no, and not to say just me and my dad specific, but our generations, like, we didn't grow up with fathers, my generation. So we responded differently. We looked for love. We looked for comfort. We looked for being a man in other places. And we were influenced by those other things. And in some cases, we did what came with that. I was fortunate enough to make it out of my situations unscathed and unscarred. So, you know, I don't glorify nothing I did wrong. I don't really talk about none of it. It's like, yo, you know, I've been in certain places. I did certain things. I made it through. I'm good. And I've been able to take my life lessons and use them for, like, to betterment, the betterment of my life.
Okay, definitely. So I'm actually over here sipping on some of your water from your water store.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey. You know, you own and operate a few businesses in Compton. And let's talk a little bit about that.
I never wanted to work for anyone.
Okay.
I've always wanted to just do my own thing. And it started with the clothing line. It started with the fashion. Started my line, Allen Spicer Clothing Company. And doing that for a while. And when I was getting some success in terms of popularity, but it didn't translate financially. So I wanted to network. And in that networking, you start to look to go to, you know, radio stations. I was like, yeah, I just want to get around people that got something, you know, that's in that field that I can maybe style or whatever. So, you know, I'm looking to intern with radio stations, and then I'll take a class to learn radio personality and the benefits in that. And then they put me on AM radio. From there, I was like, yo, I kind of want to do my own thing again. So I branch off, and I'm like, I want to focus on the hood, and we do the hub radio, and we're doing that, and now we're, you know, I did that at my grandmother's back house, and I turned that into a studio, and then from there, we went and bought a storefront in North Long Beach. I split the building up, so in the front of it, I had Mocha Brown's Cafe, so I had a whole coffee shop in the front of it. In the back, ran at night, it was a hub radio. You know, I knew it wasn't making big money, I knew it was just something that I loved to do. And the front part was what's going to make some money. So we did pretty decent for a few years. And then from there, we got picked up a sponsorship from Chic Shoe Store. And they moved us over to their media building. So we, you know, running our station out of there and
nice.
Building up more popularity. So they held us down for a little over a year in that sponsorship. From there, we went and got our where we're at now, the Hub Radio on Compton Boulevard. And now, from there, I went and started a water store. I walking in my neighborhood, and you know, actually the pandemic had hit. And my water store, the water store I go to was closed. I'm like, dang, how'd they close? It's a pandemic, you know what I'm saying? And the guy just didn't know how to run his water store no more. And he ended up losing it. You know, a few months went by. I'm like, well, shoot, let me slide up in here and talk to the owners. The opportunity presented itself. So I took it. I jumped on it. I invested in the water store. I figured, you know, I'm looking at situations like Flint, Michigan. I'm like, man, I would hate to be in a situation like that and have no recourse, you know? Mm-hmm. Or be asking for a handout, waiting for somebody to do something for you. I'm like, mm-hmm. man, let me figure this out. So got the opportunity to get the water store. From there, I figured, like, I wanna get the best water. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's look at some alkaline.
Period.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what we own. And I'm starting to learn more about alkaline, how it flushes the system out and the benefits of it and whatnot. I'm like, oh, we got to get the best alkaline. So we went hooked up with Congen. Congen makes the filters. And I got a filter that actually makes the alkaline inside the building. You know, there's alkalized water and there's alkaline water. Alkaline water has ingredients, it has the baking sodas, magnesium, whatever it needs to make it alkaline.
Yeah, I could taste it tastes like minerals, but it don't taste like heavy or nothing, but it just tastes real good. You can tell, like, it's nourishing.
Yeah, you ever drink water and you, so much water, and you feel it on your stomach, wishing around?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not how it's supposed to be.
Really?
Like, no, you can drink as much water of this water, and it's you're never going to feel that way.
Why would it do that on the other side?
That water is dead. This water is actually living. So dang. So when we're actually filling it up, you can see the water moving around for like the first 3 days. Mm. It's constantly moving because it's actually alive and it's moving.
So tell the people where they need to pull up and come get some of this alkaline water.
My address is 609 North Long Beach Boulevard, City of Compton, District 2, my section. Sweet E, you won't miss us coming to the parking lot. People know Los Sombreros in the City of Compton as like a major Mexican restaurant. And if you know where Los Sombreros is, we're in the same parking lot.
All right, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, but not to cut you off though, because you was talking about the business journey.
Oh man, I could start talking about water all day now. I'm like, I done made myself an actual student of this stuff.
Period. But,
and I started to find out that it actually helps flush out toxins out your body. Gout, diabetes, helps with diabetes, helps with high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that, but now I'm seeing it actually happen to my people. They're like, yo, I need, and it's crazy. They're like, yo, I need that crack water. I'm like, bro, don't call my, do not call
water.
My water crack water, man. But the thing is, it's just that good. And it has a good response, man. You're like, you don't find yourself going to the restroom because you're gonna be flushing this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And my community, we drink, we smoke, we breathe the bad air, we eat the bad food. We just gotta have a balance. Again, it's all about the balance.
Right.
Flush it out.
Right.
Flush it out every, you know, clean your system out every now and again.
Right.
And I don't even drink no other water. Like, I'm constantly just drinking this.
Period. I would too, okay? That part. That's what's up. So yeah. Waterworks, Alkaline, Long Beach Boulevard. That's what I'm talking about.
Man, y'all gotta, what's that? Yeah, you have to pull up to the Waterworks, man. It's something that I have been working on for a couple months. We had to clean the building up, but it was just important to me to actually bring an essential thing to the community.
Definitely.
And then I also, me and my wife have started a natural hair salon right across the street. So it was a conversation that me and my daughter was having, or my daughter was having with us. She was like, you know, she was tired of the barrettes and the twists in her hair. And, you know, she was growing up. She's like, all right, I want to weave now. Or I want, you know, to straighten my hair, you know. And I'm like, you know, there's something we can do before that. You know what
Definitely.
I'm saying? So, I said I have all women in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So the women in my family, has been the progression. It was like, yo, you go from the girls to braiding and breads, then you go straight to the weaves, the perms, you know, all that stuff. And then you get 40 years old and you're like, dang, I don't even know how to do my own hair. And you don't even know your curl pattern or your texture of your hair. You're like, man, I just so used to having it a particular way.
Right.
And I didn't want that for my child. And then I also thought, man, maybe it's a lot of other people that's dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, it has to be, you know. because our parents and grandparents was taught, and I feel like the reason why this happens is because our parents was taught, you know, in order to get a job and stay at the job, you had to look a particular way. You had to, adopt this European look. You had to have your hair straight. You got to be presentable. You can't have big hair, no afros. And so you understand that as an adult in the 60s. And you're like, well, shoot, I might as well not even get my little daughter hair to do, you know. So everybody's just transitioning into this European look.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are 40, 50 years later, and you know, we got grown women. It's like, dang, I don't really know exactly what to do. I don't feel beautiful with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm used to looking a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so we have other options. So we started the natural hair salon. They do locks. They do twists. They do blowouts. I just invested. Y'all women, y'all do y'all thing. I'm just like, you know. So don't expect to see me in there doing no hair is what I'm saying. So, yeah, no, it's a lot of different things that they do. And I brought that to the community again. It was like, of course, it benefits me financially, but again, it benefits the community. You know, I just feel like it builds self-esteem in my community. For little girls, we get a lot of little girls. We get a lot of mother and daughter, you know, groups. And, you know, they get braids, they get locks, they get twists, they get blowouts. They just all these different natural hairstyles.
Nice. And so, yeah, let people know where they can come and get their natural hair done.
Yeah, that's Naturally Me Beauty Bar. The address is 412 North Long Beach Boulevard, Compton, District 2, my section. that's where we at. Corner of, not on the corner, but we're off of Long Beach Boulevard, on Long Beach Boulevard, off of Palmer Avenue.
Okay, for sure. So, you know, speaking positive affirmations, you know, when you are elected to the city council, what are, you know, the top issues that you feel confident and ready to address?
So, my platform is public safety, economic development, housing, and culture. And that pretty much sums up, for the most part, my district. Public safety would be in regards to our relationship, again, with the sheriff department and how we want to be policed and what we feel needs to be policed. Also, to go on that, it's our infrastructure. It's the potholes. It's the graffiti. It's the trees that needs to be trimmed. It's the alleys. Basic services that you're supposed to get.
Mm-hmm.
Compton pays a lot of taxes. We got the highest water bills. We got, you know, we got some of the highest taxes. And we don't get the benefits of any of that. You know, I often refer to it like, you know, going to a high class restaurant, ordering your meal, and then before they bring your meal out, you know, they give you the bill and expect you to pay for it. You're like, well, yo, can I at least get, and now here we are, it's like, yo, can I at least get my drink? It's like, dude, wait, you know, get what you paying for. So that is something that I want to change. Then we go into the economic development. Once you get safety together, then you have businesses that wouldn't mind investing in property here. That wouldn't mind investing in the community. I'm a businessman. I'm a small businessman, so I understand the benefits that it brings for the community. I understand what it brings to your family. I understand building generational wealth. And I'm tired of having a ghetto mentality. You know what I'm saying? We live in suburbs, but we don't mentally take it that way. But Compton is a suburb by all definition. It was a suburb when all the white people was here, and it did not become a suburb because all your Negroes and brown people moved here. So, and we're talking about economic development. I'm looking at Compton Boulevard, Long Beach Boulevard. I'm seeing a lot of vacant buildings. I'm seeing a lot of blight. I'm seeing a lot of brown space. These spaces are a magnet for negativity. It's just natural progression. So like before we got the natural hair salon, the guy there, the owner, black dude, he owns the whole block. He tried to run us off. You know, he won't try me first month, last month, and deposit. Tell me, y'all got to fix up everything. I ain't fixing up nothing, you know, and take it out the rent. So we got to go through all this. And he gets to the point where he says, listen, I get more money writing this off on my taxes than I do renting it out to you. And so it was a slap in the face, being that you don't live around here. You don't see what's going on. You don't see that there's people in front of your building shooting needles all day. You know what I'm saying? And this is the image and environment you're painting for my city.
Right.
So point is, there's a lot of people that own land in Compton that feel the same way. Why do something with it when no one's going to make me and I can write it off on my taxes? And no one's making them. Well, we'll write you a ticket for street sweeping. We will write you a ticket for keeping your yard a mess. We will come and write you a ticket for parking on your lawn. We're going to tax you on your taxes. We're going to hit you everywhere as a citizen and as a resident. But the businesses and the people that really have the money to buy up a block can completely be ignored and do what they want to do and disregard all the rules and regulations. And that's an issue. Mm-hmm. So you press the line on the people that own land. Yo, keep it up. Keep, you know, like HOAs, like anything else. Like, you're responsible for this land. Do something with it. It's gated up. It got grass growing up over the gate. Do something. You know what I'm saying? And you hold people accountable and pressing lines. You're going to see a change. You're going to see people, businesses, more businesses opening up.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Long Beach Boulevard look like Bellflower Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Why can't we have a whole bunch of eateries and cigar shops and lounges
mm-hmm.
on the boulevard that we can just walk to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, only reason why is because there's a lot of property out here. And that comes from hanging out. And, like, they're not hanging out in front of right here.
Mm-hmm.
They're not hanging out at the front door right here. It's because it's activity happening.
Right.
You know, they're going to where it's dead. And they're going to sit there and do what they do. And that's my economic development. And then also, starting a business in Compton ain't that easy either. You know, just the process and going through City Hall and it's been proven several different times. I heard it from so many different people, man. It's hard to open up my business in Compton. It's true. And they don't make it that easy. It's only one person to talk to. The taxes are a little higher. I'll be honest. Like, for me, you know, I paid for my business license. It was a total of $1,200 here. Hawthorne, I think it was like $250. Long Beach was like $200. You know what I'm saying? Compton was $1,200 for me to get. And this is just a basic, going from one water store to another water store. We're just transferring the occupancy. That's all. And our taxes, we just get taxed higher. So we got housing next. It goes into the homelessness issue we have here. I have a huge homelessness issue. Why can homeless people live on the street? Sounds kind of harsh, but the reason why homeless people can live on the street is because you don't have anywhere else for them to go. So if you have a shelter, then you have the resources for those people. And then you can say, you can't live on the corner of Long Beach and Compton right now. You can't live in front of this building. You can't live in front of McDonald's. You can't do it. So
Right. Either
you go to the shelter, or we have to take you into jail. We have to have that mentality. But with having that mentality, you have to provide resources for these people too.
Right.
So identify our homeless. Can't say homelessness and like, yo, it's this big old umbrella of homelessness. No, you have people that's addicted to drugs. You have a mental health issue. You have women that have been released from jail. You have men that's been released from jail. You have kids that are 18 that turned out of foster care. You have a family that missed, you know, a couple paychecks. Now they're living in a car. So who are you going to address? How are you going to address them? So there's a program I identified, a garage conversion program. You get $50,000 to convert your garage into a living space for one family. You can only collect up to $1,000 a month for this. This is good to bring in family members, somebody that may be having some hard times. So that's an option. Another option, again, is to bring in the shelter. We need a shelter. Identify where, because everybody wants it. We just don't want it next door. You know, you can have a shelter, just don't put it next to me. And that's the mentality.
Right.
I get it. So we identify a location where it can go.
Mm-hmm.
There's off the Alameda corridor. There's a lot of factories and recycling places. And it's just zoned for, it's not zoned for housing like that. So there's not many houses over there. Maybe that could be an area we can go to. With addition to that, I've identified an investment program too. You know what I'm saying? So for people that, I know, again, people don't want to have that element around them. But how? So if I can make that an investment opportunity for you, would you be more inclined to doing that? Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we got some boxables out here. 20 by 20 mini homes, 9-foot tall ceilings, fully furnished, $50,000. We all get one. buy a piece of land, put them all on the land. We got 10, 20 on the land. We organize a group, a nonprofit that goes after funds to house homeless. There's plenty of funds out there. $1 trillion, I think, is out there right now for homelessness. Mm-hmm. But in this, you can make a 12-month program. You know, in order to be here, you got to follow this program. We got NA classes, AA classes, anger management. We have yoga. We got meditation. We got self-defense. We got all these different job training and financial literacy classes that you offer to this group of people. And over a 12-month period, you help them get their life on track and get acclimated to getting back into the world. So it's an investment opportunity for all of us. We can, in 2 years, we can pay these boxables off and we're recycling people through them. And it's just constant money flowing in and you're building up wealth, you're cleaning up the streets, and you're helping other people get on their feet. So that'll go into my housing issue. And then culture to me is this, I've never been so proud about Compton until I start learning more about Compton. It's like we all say, you know, Compton this, Compton that, you know what I'm saying? Bompton this, Bompton that. And it's like, yo, you know, what do you know about your city other than the hood aspect, the stereotypes that we all go for? You know, we're so much more rich than that. Being the fact that we are the home of the first African-American mayor this side of Mississippi. We got the first Black police chief. We got man, this dude named Maxie Filer, Mr. Compton. He's in the World Guinness Book of Records for taking the bar exam like 72 times before he actually passed it. And it's a whole story to that. You know, he passed it all of them, but, you know, they was holding back because he was a civil rights leader and he had pushed all kind of other lines and they didn't want him to be a lawyer. Truth is, he raised 4 lawyers. Judges, Judge Kevin Fathers, his son, they got families full of lawyers, and they from Compton. That's a whole nother story. It's just so much rich history here that we don't even understand. You know, they got our hoods have history. We got Treetop, and it was like, yo, you know why Treetop's called Treetop? And it's like a whole story about trees and how they were the tallest trees in the city, and it had nothing to do with the hood. It was just like, you know, the fruit town is because it was trees full of fruits. You know, it was actual plums all on this street. It was, you know, all these different streets of different fruits. So all this history I'm getting and I'm learning, I'm like, dang, we are real rich history. We got a real rich history. And you feel that about Black, too, when you start to learn more about your culture and, you know, where you come from, whether it be Jamaica, whether it be South Africa, whether it be wherever. You're, like, happy to know about the culture of that. So these are, and the same thing in the Latin culture. So if we learn more about that here, I think we would have more respect for ourselves and one another. We can constantly be reminded about the things that makes our cultures similar and rich. I like took a picture of a certain area and then I like got on Photoshop and changed the way it looked. And I started adding murals. You know, I got a mural of Shaka Zulu and Montezuma together. So it's like, you know, something that you can tap into both cultures as warriors. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yo, you know, this is, and then you can be prideful, you know, prideful of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you make this a scene. You know, you put a big light, you come over here, take pictures, make it look real nice. You know what I'm saying? And you do that throughout the city in certain areas, and it changes the energy, changes the vibe, it changes how people feel. Mm-hmm. It just works internally as well. So those are my platforms. Okay. That's my platform. Those are the different things I want to do.
Okay.
And I think this all feasible.
Yeah, I think so too. Definitely. Yeah. So you're also a father and, you know, a married.
Yeah.
And talk to us a little bit about like how it is like raising a family, raising kids in Compton 2021.
Raising kids in Compton is what ignited the change. So I kind of talked about a little bit, you know, of what I saw as a kid in terms of the prostitution. I stayed on the east side, so I saw a lot of prostitution. I lived off Long Beach Boulevard. Mm-hmm. So you see everything. One day I was driving my kid to school. We had to cross over Long Beach Boulevard. And I have, this is my oldest daughter. And we're about 7 in the morning. It's 5 women in the middle of the street, half naked. And it was like a take your pick, A, B, or C, or D. And it was like, at 7 a.m. And then I got to look at my kid and she's looking at them and I'm looking at them and I'm looking at her and we looking at each other. And it's like, dang, how poisonous is this? Like, and I mean, I'm a father, so I'm in her life and it's going to, you know, it might not have the same effect in right. her life than it would in someone else's that doesn't have a father right. or that doesn't have a mother or someone that doesn't care about them in a certain sense. So they might look at that in a different light. Same thing with the gang banging issue. Same thing with the pimping issue. Same, I mean, just across the board. So I've seen this all my life and it's like, man, and my kids are saying this. I'm like, yo, I can't keep letting them see this, you know. Like, we think things are okay for us and we're like, yo, we can tolerate it. But then when we look at our kids dealing with it, I'm like, nah, bruh. That's not how this is gonna roll. So I understand. I guess like, yeah, okay, well then why don't you just leave, Dre? And like, nah, like my community is rich. Like we really are a suburb. Even when people are talking about leaving Compton, like when I'm talking to people in the streets or canvassing, they're like, yeah, I'm thinking about moving. I'm like, y'all don't understand. Like Compton is like having a broke down mansion. And you about to leave because you got a leak in the roof. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I break it down. Like, yeah, we got a lot of work to do for sure. But you going to leave the mansion to go move to what exactly? You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes it's upgrades. Don't get me wrong. Of course, there's but in this community, we can make it so rich. We got an airport. We got a railroad. We got a school district. We got our own water supply. We got colleges, we got high schools, we got a whole school board, I mean, our own school district, we got fire departments, we got a police station, we got, what do you need? What do you need? We got everything. So take care of what you got and then raise your, you still need to have a meeting to live in Compton. So imagine if you did something to your community. You need to have a meeting to stay in the ghetto, well, what you would think is a ghetto. Mm-hmm. Like, wait till you actually build it up and see what that property turns into, because we're centrally located. We're right in the middle of everything. We're right in the middle of 710, 110, 91, 105. We're in the middle of all the freeways. We touch every city. Carson, Watts, Compton, Willowbrook, Long Beach, Paramount, Gardena. Like, we're touching everybody. You got to come through here. You got to pass through. And that's why we're the hub. So it's understanding that and understanding the value of what we have. You say, I want to change the environment, not change environments. And so that's where I'm at with it. I want to change my environment and I want to do it for my children. I want to do it for your children. I want to do it for everybody's. I want to see progression in our people. I feel like when I leave this earth, I want this space to be different than what it was when I got here. You know what I'm saying? That's how I'm going to leave my mark. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So what do you hope for your kids growing up in Compton?
I hope that they have a sense of community. I hope that they have a sense of balance, values. I think Compton is a beautiful community. I think that there's a lot of families out here that really care about each other. Again, we know the stereotypical side where it's like, yo, you see all this gang stuff, this violence and all this stuff. But then I'm actually talking to some communities that's like, they like really deal with, like they really rock with each other. And it's a sense of community and love that I want my child to experience. You know, I've been in neighborhoods where, like, some people don't even know their neighbors. Their actual next-door neighbor. They don't even know them because there's no sense of community.
Right.
It's like, you know, and I feel Compton has a great sense of community. And I love that my kids get that. Mm-hmm. And then, again, the balance. We gonna see every side of it. We gonna be over here in the farm area. We gonna be over in the city area. Mm-hmm. We gonna be swimming in pools. We gonna be horseback riding. We're going to do it all. We're going to grow crops. We're going to throw parties. We're going to do it all because we can. And it's all going to be right here. Mm. Only thing now, we need something for our kids to do.
Right.
You know, outside of, you know, well, shoot, outside of nothing. We ain't got nothing. We need skating rinks. We need movie theaters. We need something for kids to do. So, again, these are all the things that I'm thinking about. Because again, I got kids and they're here. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. How many kids do you have?
3.
How old are they?
14, 8, and 5.
14, 8, and 5. Yeah. I know. And we were actually just talking about this, about what's keeping you and your family, you know, looking so young. And you said it was the alkaline water. How old are you again? You want to let the listeners know just so they know who they voting for?
Oh, man. I am Andre Spicer, and I am 39 as of Thursday, April 1st.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, happy early birthday for sure.
Thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's the alkaline. It's the waterworks.
Boy, that black don't crack, boy. Man. But definitely. For sure. So make sure y'all, you know, pull up to the alkaline store so you can get you some and keep the skin looking popping.
Yeah.
But definitely. So you talked about, you know, like Compton having a rich history, and you kind of mentioned, like, you know, maybe some of the stories that people don't really know about. Mm-hmm. Who are some of your biggest inspirations from the city of Compton?
I would say Maxie Filer. They called him Mr. Compton, and he wasn't even from Compton. He was from like Arkansas, I believe, and he moved here and raised his family.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a civil rights leader. He's a community activist. He was partially responsible for getting Douglas Dollarhide elected as the first black mayor.
Oh, wow.
Here in Compton. Again, I talked about his him being in the World Guinness Book of Records for taking the bar exam for I think 72 times. He did it for 25 years straight, you know, or something like that. And it was just a sheer determination, you know what I'm saying? Knowing that you're smart enough, you know what I'm saying? Raising lawyers yourself. They actually passed the bar before you, you know, and just being so dedicated to not just that, but just the community, to betterment, the betterment of yourself. So, I think that was a really inspirational story to me. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, definitely. So, along with the city council seats that are open, the mayor seat is also open. You know, we've had Mayor Asia Brown for the last 8 years. For the next person who is elected to the mayor seat, what do you hope they represent?
The next person who holds the mayor seat needs to be able to represent all of the people. I feel like you need to know the community. You need to be out in the community, talking to the people, and they being able to talk to you, being connected, representing for us on a national level, being respectful, being professional at all times, and just being open to bringing in, you know, more businesses and growing the city. That's just the main thing. You know, we do a lot of infighting, so we can't have that. I think everybody understands that as of now. I would like to think that everybody understands that as of now. So it's just being able to work with everybody,
mm-hmm.
being willing to and wanting to and making that happen.
Okay, definitely. So do you think that, like, if a person represents a certain race in the mayor's seat, that the group that they represent might gain certain privileges or something like that? Because I think that a lot of us think that.
I think that's an opportunity. I mean, that's a possibility, obviously, for anyone, right? So, you know, it's all about who you're electing. Are you electing somebody that has those morals, those values, that has that vision? And if so, then, you know, it goes back to us. It's like, yo, is that what you want? I don't subscribe to the race thing here in Compton. Black and brown people have been living here since we got here. You know, we've been going to the same grocery store. We've been going to the same schools. We've been going to the same parks. We're playing the same teams. Live in the same neighborhoods. We go drive over the same potholes. We deal with the same graffiti. You know, we deal with the same toe-up alleys. This is the same, like, nothing's different. So when we have the discussion of black or brown, it's like, yo, what are we talking about? You know, you all are dealing with the same issues. So for Compton, it's like, yo, let's focus on the issues. Who are we getting behind? Are these people able to Do they have a vision? That's what I want to know. Do they have a vision? With that vision, can they carry it out? Can they show me examples of them carrying a vision out? Can, you know, and this is what I want to get behind. I want to get behind the logic. I've seen piss poor black leaders. I've seen piss poor brown leaders.
Right.
Piss poor don't come in a color. Piss poor is just piss poor.
Hmm.
So we're getting this conversation as to who's in power, who's not in power. Like, you're supposed to represent the city. You're supposed to bring the city up. And it has to bring all the people in that up. If you're worried about somebody giving power to a certain group, you need to consider your vote for that person. Because if you're not voting for them because of what they can bring to the table, then you're voting for them because of a color. And then that is a problem, because we all, again, know piss poor leadership on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to bring up, if I bring a piss poor black person in as mayor and I get bit, or I, you know, something, you know, doesn't work out in my favor, or they, you know, they're not representing themselves or representing this community, I still look bad. My community still doesn't benefit from this black mayor.
Right.
Or from this brown mayor.
Like, right.
Don't tell me about it. I don't care about the color. What is this dude going to do? What is this woman going to do?
Okay.
How are they going to do it? Let's keep the conversation there. And that's what I've been kind of pushing. Like, let's keep the conversation on what you can do. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Let's stick to facts.
Definitely. So what do you think the black and brown community, you know, there's definitely a lot of people that are working towards making sure that people know that there is a sense of unity, organization, and just collaboration amongst the groups, you know. Mm-hmm. But for, we can't ignore that there are still, you know, some issues that aren't really just exclusive to black and brown people, but just because of our close proximity. What are some ways that you think that people in the city of Compton can do to more collectively work towards unity within the black and brown communities?
So you're not going to change how some people feel. There's going to be people that are racist. Racism lives, and it's going to be here. But again, you have to focus on the things that bring us together for the people that want to. Okay. And then first, let me say this. Pro-black doesn't mean anti-brown. Pro-Latinx doesn't mean anti-Black Lives Matter.
Right.
They don't have to mean opposites. So we're always in this, we don't have to be. It's like, yo, we all should be represented. Bring your representation to the table. And then let's figure out how it works for all of us. Because we've been in this, again, been in the same communities. We've been doing the same things. I wouldn't expect us to so much dive into the racial aspects of it. I'm looking at more how we can bring the community together. And for me, again, that's going to be in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking culture. I'm talking about, hey, man, look, we got Montezuma, we got Shaka Zulu, we got Mansa Musa, and we have, you know, we represent all these different people. And we, again, let's start bringing them together. Like, did you know that, you know, there was Olmec heads in Mexico? And what does that mean? You know, and we start bringing the cultures together. Did you know that? You know, saying, what does that mean? Okay, well, let's talk about that.
Right.
You know, and start bringing all the similarities that we have. You know, I love Mexican food. You know what I'm saying? Well, most black people do.
Right.
You know, and there's some Spanish music I love to listen to. I don't mind enjoying myself in that scene either.
Mm-hmm.
Prime example, we are, some of us are byproducts of interracial relationships. We're having sex with each other. We're marrying each other. You
right.
know what I'm saying? What are we going to split those families up to? Is that what we're like? Yo, pick a side, bro. Mark, pick a side. You know what I'm saying? That's insane to me.
Right.
Like, why would we even do that?
Right.
You know, and we've been intertwined too long
right.
to let the racism come into our community and separate us.
Right.
So again, I'm like, yo, y'all, let's stick to intelligent conversation. Let's talk about the the benefits that we have with each other. Let's talk about the similarities. Let's talk about how we're going to help each other. Mm. And of course, we have to have Black conversations. And, you know, in the Black household, we got to get our stuff together. Same thing in the Latin household and the Brown household. Everybody got to get their stuff together mm-hmm. in their own household. But it doesn't mean forget y'all over there.
Right.
It just doesn't mean that.
Right.
It just means like, hey, we got to get our household together.
Definitely. Okay, for sure. So when do the elections end?
The last day to vote is April 20th. Your ballot has to be postmarked for April 20th or before. And your vote will be counted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you're a registered voter, you're getting a ballot.
Okay.
Definitely. All registered voters are getting a ballot. And again, that was the curveball that would, you know, no one knows how this is going to go. Everybody gets a ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got a month to send it in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how it goes.
Definitely. And so just like before we close out, can you just let the people know why is it important for them to be civically engaged in their city?
I'm glad you asked that. So, and this is one thing I've been preaching for the last, 8 years, is presidential elections are good, but that's the hype, right? Those votes don't affect you as immediate as a local election.
Mm-hmm.
So your mayors, your council people, those people that live around the corner from you,
right,
make the decisions that are going to affect you by the end of the day. And those are the people that we need to pay attention to who we vote in. Because again, those people are also representing us. Those people are also going after funds for us, bringing in community, bringing in businesses, bringing in resources to our community. So if you want to make an immediate change in your community, you have to pay attention to your local voting. And again, the most important people is going to be the ones that's living right in your neighborhood, or should be living right in your neighborhood.
Definitely. So let the people know where they can find you. And is there anything else that you just want the people to know that we maybe didn't touch on?
No, I think you got me, man. You have some pretty hard questions. There's some conversations that we've been having, too. It was the race conversation has been a major conversation lately. I'm glad you asked. I'm glad I got a chance to talk about that.
Yeah, because I know that, you know, with like the street vendor situation and them being assaulted, and that's just been like a issue. And then I got a call the other day that somebody said so it's where we are. We might not see that extreme because we are not interacting with people that are like doing violence against race mm-hmm. people, you know, against people based on their race or even just trying to get a few dollars, you know. Right. But on the flip side, like that is
a thing,
something that's continuing to happen. And so again, like what are ways that we could work together, like on both sides, you know, just in your community, like as a Black person, as a person from the Latino community, so that we're not, you know, continuing to just perpetuate like the negative of like what people being assaulted, like, you know.
Yeah. We have to take control of our neighborhoods.
Right.
Take control of our communities. We know it's wrong. We know jacking anybody is wrong.
Right.
But especially people that's innocent, people that's working hard to make a dollar. Like we know that's not ago. And we know we wouldn't have it if it was our aunts and uncles out there.
Right.
So in our community, we need to take our neighborhoods need to take control of that situation. In Compton, we've addressed it on the street level.
Mm-hmm,
I can't say that I've seen it much in Compton as of late. And I would like to say it's because we addressed it on the street level. Because that's where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And when that conversation happens and those that's enforced, you start to see the result. We would definitely have to go and, you know, talking to the streets and getting them engaged and getting them on board for this, you
mm-hmm.
know. Again, we're not all racist. Everybody's not racist. Everybody doesn't feel that way, but it could look that way when that is the environment you're in, you know? So yeah, my thing would be, we go into the streets, we talking to the people involved. And I can only speak for Compton. I would love to have other people kind of stepping up in their respective sections and trying to, you know, address the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But in this city, I feel like we've addressed it. I don't feel like we've seen it as of late. And if it was to happen, I think, you know, we're very clear that that's not okay.
Right. You know, shouts out to One Compton. Yep. I know that they did a collective campaign with the Black and Brown community.
Yeah.
So definitely shouts out to them for getting on that immediately. Sure.
That was major. And it just, these things need to be addressed because it can take a life into its own. You know, all it's going to take is, especially on the internet, all it takes is for one or two people to say something crazy. Then it's like full-fledged race war, you know, like all on the internet. And like, bro, hold on, how we get here?
Right.
Well, so-and-so said, I'm like, dang. And our words mean so much. They cut so deep. One thing that I wanted to address too was on my public safety issue, again, is self-accountability. So social media, right? We're talking about social media. You can do certain things or can't do certain things on social media, like incite a riot at the Capitol, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, you do that, you call a riot at the Capitol, we're going to shut down your social media. If you say something anti-gay, we will shut down your social media. If you say something anti-vaccine, we will shut down your social media. If you say something disrespectful or shoot another Black or brown person, if you are able to gangbang on internet, these things are perpetuated and shared and liked and commented on. And it's a clear violation of terms and conditions, but it's able to live in that community.
Mm.
And it's only able to live in that community for particular reasons. And we should understand that and we should realize that. So I'm seeing a lot of gangbanging. I'm seeing a lot of disrespectful stuff on the internet. And some of the stuff I can't come back from. So I can imagine someone that lives in that lifestyle really ain't no coming back from. But this is shared. This is perpetuated. We can talk about this. Some people are getting so much attention just from being disrespectful. And we're killing ourselves behind it. And the powers that be don't hold the same standards in our community than they would for the Capitol, than they would for the vaccines, that they would for the homosexual community. And two things, we need to call that call that to their attention first. And then we also need to realize it ourselves, like, bro, get off of the internet with this. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you really want to see change, get off the internet with this stuff. Violence exploited is something that could really, really tear our community apart. And
it does every day.
Right.
In hip hop and, you know,
this
media.
Is true. This is true.
But yeah, I agree.
This is true. But yeah, I want to call the attention to that too, man. And we need to make that an issue.
Definitely.
So yeah, how can the people find me? I know I'll be going off into tangents about a whole bunch of different things.
Oh no, it ain't a tangent. I just got a little, I thought that was a money notification. So my bad. That caught my attention.
Where's
I was
the
like,
money?
Okay.
What?
What's my I read an article, the girl was like, income producing activity, my IPA for the day. Income producing activity.
Yeah.
I was like, girl, I'd love it. So
yeah,
my bad.
That's
definitely
right.
Not a tangent. You know, definitely people, you know, it's definitely good to be concise, but sometimes people like to hear you speak more because that helps them to kind of gauge, I feel like, the spirit of a person, honestly.
True story.
You know?
True story. I always said, if you want to learn more about a person, just let them talk.
Just let them talk, for sure.
And whether they be good or bad, just let them go.
Definitely.
So, I appreciate the opportunity, though, and the microphone and the platform. But again, my name is Andre, Hub City Dre Spicer. I can be found on social media under those same names. I am Hub City Dre or Andre Spicer. District 2 My website is AndreSpicer4HubCity.com. All of my information is there. Donation link. We have a fundraiser coming up for this weekend, Saturday. We're doing a drive-in situation, so it's COVID friendly. We have a big screen. We have we're actually going to play the video in your car, so you can actually hear it. Tap into the radio station and like a real drive-in. We'll have food trucks out there. We'll be out there for about 4 hours. We're starting at 6 o'clock. It is a fundraiser. It's $40 per vehicle. So you can stack 100 people in a vehicle if you can. 10 people. You know, it's still $40 for the vehicle.
Right.
For the space, bring out your lawn chairs, blankets, whatever else that you might need if you want to kind of sit outside. But it's a family-friendly event. Just plan to have a good time, raise a few dollars, and end this thing strong and take home this win.
Definitely. And where did you say the event was going to be?
I did not. It's because it's at a secret location.
Oh, period.
You can't get it until you pay for the ticket.
Okay,
yeah,
but
and we,
follow.
Yeah, follow. Actually, just go to the website.
Go to the website.
AndreSpicer4HubCity.com.
Definitely. That definitely sounds like a really fun event.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. Oh, we're watching Coming to America.
The second one. Okay.
The first one I thought was just not family friendly enough. The first one.
Second was family friendlier enough.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy was a little more raw when he was before he had kids.
Okay.
After he had kids, he was like, "Let me tone down cursing."
Mm-hmm.
So, Coming to America was my favorite movie of all time.
And
when I saw the second one, I thought it was cool. I was like, "Yeah, this is a cool remake," you know, or
whatnot.
Wasn't the same,
right?
But that's because I like hearing old Eddie Murphy. I can still watch Raw and watch all that, but yeah, this one is more family friendly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Definitely. So yeah, Andre Spicer, Compton City Council District 2. We wish you the best of luck and all the support. And thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
Like this episode?
Leave a review and stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing to Sloss and Girl Speaks and follow Sloss and Girl on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.